So we're still on Yudalit Amud Aleph. Let's see, we got up to the count of the Nevi'im and the Nevi'is.
Right.
So let's go over that. So we said that there were 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os that prophesied in Israel. We said that that's hard to imagine because the Pasuk seems to indicate that there were many, many more Nevi'im and Nevi'os. And the Gemara quotes a Pasuk, Vayehi ish echad min harasayim sofim. And the word Ramasayim seems to keep Masayim and sofim on Nevi'im. So from this Pasuk alone, we see that there were 200 Nevi'im, which is way beyond 48. So that's the Gemara's Kasha, which leads us to the words Umihava Tuvahava. If you can find those words. Here you have them? Okay, great. So again, the Pasuk itself was where? Let's just go over that.
Shmuel Alf.
Okay, very good. So there were many more Nevi'im. Kidisanya, we have a brisa that says, Harmi Nevi'im Omdu Lehem LeYisrael. And how many during the course of generations? Kiflayim Kiyotze Mitzrayim. So we're talking about twice the amount of Jews that went out of Mitzrayim. Obviously, 1.5 million Jews.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right, amazing. And in the Dor of Elkanah, in his generation alone, there were 200 Nevi'im. Ella, so what does the Brisa mean when it says 48? And the answer is Nevuah Shehutzrecha L'Doros Nichteva. In other words, these 48 Nevi'im had prophecies which would pass on, which become integrated into the Torah itself, into Torah Shebichsav, because it had a Horah L'Doros. It would be teaching us something for all generations. And v'shalohutzecha, but those nevuos which were only relevant for that moment in time, but would not have any eternal meaning to it or significance to it, lo nichtava, were not written in the Torah itself. So there were many, many Nevi'im, but their Nevuah did not have a Horah L'Doros. Okay, that's what we have so far. So the bulk of the Nevuah was not written in any sort of canonized form. It wasn't integrated into Tanakh. But only these 48 Nevi'im that were mentioned before the Brisa, they had a Nevuah which was a Horah or a Tshuva L'Doros, and therefore be incorporated into Tanakh.
Look at this very long Rashi.
He's going to go through the
all the 48 of them, so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to have time to do that.
No, I'm just interested to see that.
Right. So now the Gemara brings a different drasha on the same pasuk that we saw from Shmuel. Vayehi ish echad min haramasayim tzofim, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar. What does it mean, Ramasayim Tzofim Adam Haba Mishtei Ramos Shetzofos Zu Es Zu? This is a description of the place from which Elkanah came. There were two hilltops that you could see from one to the other. They're like twin tops. And oh, good morning.
Good morning, Asher.
Good morning.
Where's your hat?
I have it.
Oh, good.
So Elkanah was living on one of these two Ramot, one of these two hilltops. And Ramatayim is the name of the place that had two Ramot. Nothing more exciting than that. Now the Gemara brings another drush on the same Pasuk. Rabbi Chanin Omar. And he's going to interpret this pasuk in terms of a description of Elkanah. Who was he? Adam HaBa, Ba meaning I guess he descended from Bnei Adam Sha'omdim Berumo Shal Olam. Now it seems a grandson of some very, very special people. Mandin, who are these people that are Omdim Berumo Shal Olam? And here's where the Gemara throws a curveball at us. Bnei Korach. Betzivu Bnei Korach Lo Mesu. And that's a pasuk in Parshas Balak, I think. So what does it mean? It means that even though Korach himself was part of this rebellion, but his children were not, or maybe alternatively they did tshuva, so that when the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed up Korach, it says that Bonav, his children, did not die together with him. Now, according to Chazal, as we're just about to see, it's not the way we think that when the earth opened up its mouth, the Bnei Korach were not swallowed up. They were in fact swallowed up, but they didn't die. How is that? Tana Mishum Rabbeinu, Mokom Nisbatza Lehem B'Gehenom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up a place in Gehenom, a very special place. I guess there are different levels in Gehenom. This is on the more mechubadika level. V'amdu olav. And in Gehenom, they were able to stand on this very high level, and that's how they survived it. So when the pasuk says that Elkanah was Mizaro Shel Korach, and he's called Ramasayim, Ramasayim means a higher place, which is Rumo Shel Olam, and that's the Mokom Gavoh B'Gehenom, where the Bnei Korach saved themselves. Sheva Nevios Maninhu, who are these seven Nevios? And this Gemara surprised me because I thought for sure Rachel and Leah would, and Rivka, Rachel and Leah would be in the list, but actually they weren't there. They don't appear here. My name is Sarah, Miriam, Dvorah, Chana, Avigail, Chulda, V'Esther. So those are the seven. The Gemara is now going to go through each one of the seven to prove that they were Nevios. So Sarah Dechsiv, it says when Avram took Sarai and he married her, his brother Nachar married Milcah. The Nitziv Mivalojin makes a point here that Haran had two daughters. The older one was Milcah and the younger one was Sarai. Now if you assume, which the Nitziv vacillates on this point, but he's assuming right now that Avram Avinu was the older brother, Nachar was the younger brother. So it's interesting that Avram married Sarai, who was the younger daughter. And the pasuk feels compelled to explain why. Why the marriage between Avram and Sarai? Why didn't Avram marry Milcah? And the answer is that although they were both the daughters of Haran, but the Torah describes Avi Milcah v'Avi Yiska, that Sarai is called Yiska in this pasuk. She's the younger daughter, but she's called Yiska. She's not called Sarai. The Amar of Yitzchak, why is the Torah giving her this name Yiska? Yiska is Zusara. V'lominikra Shma Yiska Shesachsa Beruach HaKodesh. So the word Yiska means that she sees. She's a seer, and she's able to see in Ruach HaKodesh. And Emar, because later on, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes, Avraham Avinu is very, very hesitant to send away Yishmael on Sarah's initiative. Because after all, Yishmael is his son, so to send him away, that's a big deal for Avraham, very hard for him to do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu announces, Kol Asher Tomar Eilecha, Sarah Shema B'Kolah. And the word Kolah here is a reference to Ruach HaKodesh that she had. And this is all indicative of the fact that Sarah was a Nevi'ah. So we have really two independent proofs that Sarah was a Nevi'ah. One is the very name that she was given here in the Torah, that's Yiska. And the second is that Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, Kol Asher, etc., Tishma B'Kolah. And the Kolah is a reference to Nevu'ah. And the Marsha points out that why is this word Kolah interpreted as Nevuah's Ruach HaKodesh. He says, because it could have said, Kol Asher Tomara Elecha Sora Shma. Oh, wait. And the word Kolah is superfluous. And that's coming to teach us her power of Nevuah. Now it's interesting that Sora is considered in this context even a greater Nevuah than the level of Nevuah of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu here is hesitant. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you have to listen to Sarah. Maybe this is indicative of Sarah's power of intuition. In other words, what she sees in Yishmael is a negative influence on Yitzchak. She sees a mitzachik. You know, nobody knows exactly what the word mitzachik means. Rashi gives a whole bunch of interpretations, but they're not very laudatory, you know, for Yishmael. On the contrary, it's very pejorative. He's a mitzachik, and he might be guilty of gilui arayos, guilty of other averus. But on a simple level of pshat, you could say the word mitzachik means that he has a sort of laid-back attitude towards life. You know, life is fun, and eat, drink, and be merry kind of thing. And she sees that as a very corruptive influence on young Yitzchak, who's meant to be the next chain in Knesset Yisrael. And she takes a very strong stand. You know, Gareishus Omar Zos, and get rid of him. Not knowing even what would be his destiny after she threw him out. It's a very dramatic parasha, and Hashem says to listen to Sarah. Avraham Avinu is hesitant. He's inhibited about the whole idea. It's also possible, this is my own take, I don't have any proof for this, so don't for tishkach, as we say, but it's possible that Yiska had an intuition that Avraham Avinu had to get out of there. You know, he was in places like Aram, he was in places like Haqqaran. You know, these were not very positive places for Avraham to be active in as a teacher of monotheism. So what I'm suggesting is that since this is the last pasuk before Lech Lecha, it could be that her Ruach HaKodesh already expressed itself in the fact that she was encouraging Avraham Avinu to pack his bags and get out of here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu confirms that at the very beginning of Lech Lecha, and he appears to Avraham. And once again, it's Kol Asher Tomar Elecha Sara. You know, her initiative to go to Eretz Canaan is confirmed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and supported by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he says that Lech Lecha, you know, this place is a lichluch, Chazal say, and you have to get out of this lichluch. So Sarah is really unyielding. You know, when it comes to matters of raising her children, the education of her son Yitzchak, she's not willing to budge. And she takes a very firm stand. Now, Chazal say that the parsha of Eish Yischaiel Miyimtza and Mishlei is an allusion to Sarah Imenu. And Sarah is described in that capital as Lechem Atzlus Lo Sochal. You remember that pasuk?
Yeah.
And Chazal say that Sarah's idea of education was that you have to work very hard. You know, there are no shortcuts. And the Chasam Sofer has a whole drush about this, because he says that the meeting between Avram and Sarah, the three Malachim, symbolically represented the avoda of Talmud Torah, and Avraham Avinu wanted to prepare solas, and she said kemach. And what's the difference between solas and kemach? Solas is already ground up; it's refined flour, and that represents the part of Torah that's called Mishnah Brura. Mishnah Brura means it's already presented in a very short form, very simple, very superficial. You don't have to rack your brains. But she wanted to give them kemach. I guess you'd call it whole wheat. You know, and whole wheat means that you have to work on it, and you have to refine it, and then make it into a flour. And that's the part of Torah that requires a tremendous amount of work and toil. And that's lechem atzlus lo sochel. You know, she didn't want to give him the lechem of atzlus, of laziness. That's the lechem of solace. That's already ground up. She wanted to give him kemach. That's the drush of the Chasam Sofer. So the many aspects of Sarah's life that indicate her greatness, and maybe even in a certain sense greatness beyond the other Imos, because we don't find, as we said, the Rivka, Leah, Rachel are not mentioned here in this context. Sarah is also described as a beautiful woman, but that probably refers to not only external beauty but also inner beauty. Now the Gemara is assuming until now that the word Yiska means that she, Sarah, is an Avia. Dover Achad is another way of interpreting the word Yiska. Shakol Sochim B'Yofia. That everybody perceived her beauty. And again, this is something that requires a lot of study, because the Tanakh seems to put a tremendous amount of emphasis over and over again on beauty. We're going to see it in Esther, we saw it already. So on the list, after Sarah, we have Miriam. How do we know that Miriam was an Avia? And then the Mefarshim here, the Chidah and others, they ask, the Pasuk itself says, Hanavia Achos Aram. So why is the Gemara looking? Why is the Gemara looking high and low for a proof when the Torah explicitly says that, describes Miriam as an Avia? So he says the following, that what the Gemara wants to know is, it says Achos Aram. In other words, that maybe this Miriam is not the same Miriam that we're talking about. In other words, we said that there are seven Nevios, and if we want to identify Miriam as one of the seven, then we're going to be stuck, so to speak. We're going to have to face the music as far as the Pasuk Achos Aaron, because the Achos Aaron and Miriam, that it's a little bit there's a little bit of a discrepancy over here. So the Gemara says, no, I'm going to prove to you that Achos Aaron is a reference to Miriam. D'ksiv v'tikach Miriam anevia Achos Aaron. And what does it mean, Achos Aaron? V'lo Achos Moshe. Normally we would have anticipated that the Torah would identify Miriam as the sister of Moshe. Why in this context is the Torah identifying her as Achos Aaron? Is there a possibility here that there's another Miriam here that's not the same Miriam that we're talking about? So the Gemara now has to justify. Why is she called Achos Aaron? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav, she said, Misnava kishehi Achos Aaron. Her nevuah began even before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, and in fact, her nevuah was about the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore she's called Achos Aaron. And just like Aaron is a Navi, so too Miriam is a Navi. V'omeres, what was the content of her nevuah? Imi she'tele ben, my mother is going to give birth to a son. She'oshia es Yisrael, he will be the Moshian shel Yisrael mi'avodosam, from the Sheba to Para. So she was the one who predicted the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now if we see this nevuah in its context, keep in mind that after the Gzeira of Kol Abena Yilod Hayorot HaShlichu, Amram was the one who said to Yocheved that we're going to separate and not have children. You remember that? Mm-hmm. And as a result, all the men divorced their wives. And Miriam was the one who convinced her father to resume relationship with her mother, with his wife Yocheved. And the reason why, because she said that there's hope for the future. Miriam really is, in my understanding, is the single personality in Tanakh that represents faith in the future, optimism in the dark despair of Golus, of Mitzrayim. And this nevuah that we're about to see, that she predicted the birth of the Moshiach Shal Yisrael, that really is all part of her optimism, that she believes that Chas v'Shalom, for Amram to separate from his wife, he has to resume relationship with his wife, and from that relationship we're going to have the Yeshua. Now, did Amram, with the birth of Moshe, actually confirm or support the fact that Har Nevuah was, this was just a little baby? So, B'shosh Nolad, immediately with his birth, Nismale Kol Abayis Kulo Ora, the house was full of light. And at this point, this kind of miracle that took place was a confirmation of her nevuah, at least in the mind of Amram, her father. Omer Avia, Unishaka al Rosha, The Amar Lo, and he says to his daughter Miriam, Biti Niskaima Nevuaseth, your Nevuah has come to fruition.
How much older than Avram was?
If I'm not mistaken, 3 years.
So she's.
Yeah. Now, what is this whole.
Comes 3 years
late.
After
yeah.
that, right?
Yeah. Right.
So how old is she?
At the sixth.
She's a younger
little girl.
Right. Okay. Right. Now, what is this whole business about Nismale Kolabayis Kulo Ora? So here we have a Rashi in Chumash, and then we have a Medrash. The Medrash gives a second opinion. So Rashi's opinion is that when it says that Moshe was born, the Torah says, Vatera Sayel Kitovu. What's Kitovu? So Rashi says, Nismale Abayis Kule Ora. They knew it was Tov because the house was full of light. The Medrash says something a little bit different, that Nolad Mohul, that Moshe Rabbeinu was born without an Orla. So I saw once, I wanted to share with you a Sicha from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Again, I'm going to give it to you just in a nutshell. I mean, it's pages and pages long. But his thesis is that these two opinions about how they recognized Moshe Rabbeinu from the moment he was born are really two halves of a whole. In other words, it's not a machlokas, and it's either this or that. It could be both. Why? Because Moshe represents, the Rambam writes in his Pirush HaMishnayos, that Moshe represents the shleimus, the perfection that a human being could possibly achieve, you know, the highest level of perfection. So the Rebbe points out that perfection can be understood on two levels. There's a person's own personal inner perfection, and then there's perfection as he impacts on others and he transmits the Torah to others. And these two opinions in the Medrash, Rashi quotes only one of them, are each respectively focused on another aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu Shleimus. If he was born Mohul, right, the whole purpose of Mila is to perfect a person in a spiritual sense, not physically, but spiritually. That represents Moshe's inner perfection. But that's not enough. What about Moshe's Shleimus in terms of his influence on others? That's called the R. R is something that if I come into this room, and if it's a dark room, I don't sense the harmony of the room. I'm in the dark, literally. And Moshe Rabbeinu lit up the whole room. That's his impact on others. And the Rebbe goes on to say that in terms of a person's shleimus, it's not enough that he achieves a goal of his own personal inner shleimus, but he has to also share with others, have an impact on others. That's Moshe Rabbeinu, the double shleimut. Now, all this looks fine and dandy until the Gzeira forced the parents to put little Moshe into the Yaar. And at that point, Amram again becomes a pessimist, if you will. Kevin Sheshlichu Liyaar. Now again, the Chazal and the Medrash, I think, describe how the Mitzvim came from house to house, and when they discovered a child, they would confiscate the child and put him into the Nile to fulfill the mandate of the king of Paro. So at that point, Omer Avia Utfach al Rosha. And now he gives her a bang on the head, and he says, Omer Lo, Biti Hecha Nevuasech. Where's the fulfillment of your prophecy that this is the Moshian Shal Yisrael? So that even though Amram saw the original miracle of Nismali Abayis Ora, but once they threw him to the Ora, he despaired. He gave up hope. Behind the Tzuv, and as a result of this comment and this action of her father, she, Miriam, Vateisatzev Achoso Merochok Lidea, she knew that something had to happen over here. It couldn't be that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be drowned in the Nile. And therefore, when it says Lidea in this pasuk, that she stands Merochok Lidea, it means Ladas Mayeh Besof Nivuasa, will her prophecy come to fruition or will it not? And Dea apparently is the idea of the final fleshing out of some idea. She had an idea, she had a nevuah, it was somewhat abstract. Now it seems that there's a barrier and it's not being implemented, there's an impediment. And she wanted to see Ladas. Ladas means a Dea. You know, it's not enough that you have Chachma and you have Bina, you have to have Das. She wanted to see it follow through. And the rest of the story is well known. Now the next woman on the list is Dvorah. Tichsiv. Yeah, I wonder, by the way, this is my own comment, I wonder if historically, you know, the Talmud is like 2,000 years old, maybe I'm exaggerating, but not by much. I wonder if there are any books of any other religions that will spend so much time on seven women as being the greatest leaders of Klal Yisrael. I don't know. I don't know the history of it, but maybe you could Google it and find out for me. The whole question, the position of a woman, you know, those who try to detract from Orthodox Judaism will tell you, oh, the woman is put down and so forth. I mean, the Gemara goes on and on. I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface yet in the seven Nevi'ahs.
Even the Gulas, all of them are all the women behind the scenes.
It's not just
the women behind the scenes. So it's like in each one of these women, if they were pivotal in
right.
In
Shifrat Pua.
Yeah.
So again, that's also included. That's also includes Miriam, but still, it's unbelievable. It's really unreal. Okay. By the way, even this claim that, you know, in halacha women are excluded from testimony, it's a classical argument against it. So the truth is, it's not so posh. What do I mean? There's something called Misa Sabal. And she's believed. Imagine one woman who testifies that she saw a dead body will permit the Bezdin, will permit her, this man's wife, to get married, which is an HCC, you know, you're talking about an Anisa Misa, a capital crime. And the one who writes about this is Rav Moshe Meiselman. Are you familiar with his book, Jewish Women and Jewish Law?
Mm-hmm.
And he has a chapter there about testimony. And in that chapter, Moni, he points out that there are two categories of psul eidus. There's something called a chashash mashaker, and there's something called a psul aguf. For example, a melech is psul eidus, and Moshe and Aaron are psul eidus. That's not a chashash mashaker. That's a din of psul aguf. And he says that a woman's psul is not a chisar nemanus, it's a psul aguf. I mean, again, you have to really study this in depth. You know, you're touching on those areas of halacha which are very, you know, speculative. But I was always impressed by that chapter in his book. And it's not apologetics. I mean, he's really trying to work out the halacha and see how the halacha defines it. So how do we know that Dvorah was a Nevi'ah? D'chsiv, it says, Udvorah, this is in Malachim, I believe, Udvorah isha Nevi'ah eshes lapidos. And the Gemara is not sure about this Lapidos, because it seems that she was married to another man by the name of Barak. So my Ashes Lapidos, what's the deeper meaning of the word Lapidos? Shohaisa Osa Psilos Lamigdash. Right, at that time there was no Migdash, it was Mishkan Shiloh. And she was in charge of preparing the Neros for the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash in Mishkan Shiloh. And then the pasuk goes on to say the Yosheves Tachas Tomer, and she's sitting under an eitz tomer, which is a day tree, I believe. And from there she would be a shofetes, and she would hand down verdicts for all issues that came up, litigations and the like. So why is she sitting under a tomer? So Gemara has a few different approaches to this. One approach is Maishna Tachas Tomer, Om Rabbi Shimon ben Avshalom Mishum Yichud. This was a very high tree. It had no shade. There was no privacy whatsoever. So no one would have to be inhibited about coming in front of Dvorah and bringing a question to her. And there was no violation of the Isur Yichud. Dover Ach Gemara has now a second explanation of Tomer. Why is Tomer chosen here? Ma Tomer ze ein lo elo lev echad af Yisrael shebaoso ador lo hoylem elo lev echad laviyam shebashamayim. that she was able to be a shofetis in Klal Yisrael, because Klal Yisrael were very eager, they gravitated towards her to come under her influence and her guidance. And that's because they have a lev echad. They were all focused on serving Hashem and fulfilling His will. The Tomer, which has what's called the Srafa Ilon, which is the moisture, or the, you know, the moisture that's sucked up from the ground when the rains fall, and that moisture is somehow travels up the tree from the geza, from the roots of the tree, and is usually it spreads throughout the entire tree. In the case of a tamar, I'd have to look it up in the books of botany, but it seems like this sraf goes from gizo l'chol orach ha'ilon. It's lev echad. It's like one pathway that goes all the way up to the top. And
I think that's
what does he say there?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just thinking it was a palm tree. You know, it doesn't discuss that part at all.
Because he has a whole discussion here about why the anofim, you know, the branches of the tamar, the eight tamar, they bend down here and there. It's a very unique shape, and he says the reason for that is because the moisture goes all the way up through the bark of the tree, but it doesn't actually hit the leaves of the tree. The leaves of the tree get some sort of fallout moisture or rainwater.
And you know the reason. The reason that it's understood why the palm trees are like that is because they're adapted well for wind, for hurricanes.
Maybe it's as a result of this.
They, you know, with winds, with nothing around them, the wind doesn't blow them down. If you have a lot of branches, trees. They do capture red. Like it's like if you look at them, they can capture. Like they'll bring almost like orchids bring the water kind of into the center.
Does he translate the word lave with some scientific term? Okay.
No, just only one heart. Just says.
All right, let's go on to Chana. I think Dvorah, by the way, is unique on this whole list, because if I'm not mistaken, she's the only one who becomes a Mora HaRab Yisrael. All the other Neviyos are Neviyos, but she becomes like the leader of her generation. It's pretty...
So this is like quoting the Rashi, but then it also talks about that the sap being analogous to the heart. Yeah,
the sap. Right, that's the sap. That's what Tu Bishvat is all about, by the way. According to Rashi, in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, Tu Bishvat is all about the fact that there's enough moisture from the rains that fell up till Tu Bishvat, that's going to Basil, I mean, up till Tu Bishvat, such that now the sap is enough to support the tree and its fruits for the rest of the year. Again, we're not going to see that for many, many months down the line. That's why the Mefarshim always point out that Tu Bishvat is all based on what we call potential. Because you really won't see anything on the tree in Tu Bishvat. I mean, there are a few trees, maybe you'll see some, but most of what we're going to see as a result of Tu Bishvat is going to come months down the line, maybe in Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, in those months. Now we're up to Chana. So the one wants to know, how do we know that Chana was in a via? Dechsiv, Vatispalel, Chana, Vatomer. This is the Shiras Chana after she gave birth. Olatz libi Bashem, Ramah Karni Bashem. And the Gemara is going to interpret that these words, Ramah Karni, are a nevuah. They make up a prophecy. Because below, she doesn't say Ramah Pachi, because she's come to give us a remez about. Now, when you talk about, there's something called a keren and something called a pach. These are two different containers. One of which is much more long lasting. A pach is usually made of pottery, and as you and I know, if you drop a piece of pottery, it breaks, shatters into small pieces. And she deliberately chose a different word to substitute for a pach shemen. She speaks about a keren, and a keren is something that's permanent. And the pasuk describes in Shmuel Aleph, Vayikach Shmuel es keren hashemen vayimshach oso. We're talking about David HaMelech, Later on, the word Keren will appear in the anointing of Shlomo HaMelech. It says in Malachim Aleph, Vayikach Tzadok HaKohen Es Keren HaShemen Min HaOil Vayimshach Es Shlomo. So we have the Mashiach of David HaMelech by Shmuel. We have the Mashiach of Shlomo HaMelech by Tzadok HaKohen. And in both cases, the Torah goes out of its way to write the word Keren. And the word Keren indicates a certain strength, a certain permanence. It's unshakable and unbreakable. And where is the Nevuah of Chana? Here's the Nevuah of Chana. It says, David Shlomo Shenimshachu BeKeren Nimshacha Malchuson. But Shol V'Yehu Shenimshachu BePach Lo Nimshacha Malchuson.
Now the question, was it a different container, or were they just referring to it by a different name? Because I thought that the oil was the same oil that through all the generations.
So. Right, I'm assuming it's the same oil, but it's not coincidental. I'll just read to you the Psukim in Tanakh, in Malachim Beis, with regard to the Mashiach of Yehu, it says, V'lakachta Pach Hashemen v'yatzakta al rosho. Again, the Shemen might be the same, but it's in a pach.
But I guess what I want to ask is it in a different container, or are they just calling it by a different name?
I think it's in a different container. So yeah, it's in a pach Shemen. You know, it's the physical action of using a pach.
The main
indicates that it's very breakable. Yeah. And she was hinting at a nevuah.
Yaakov, I mean, it was the same pach. No, we say that was the same pach shemen. So maybe it is a lashon.
But he says it with regard to Shol HaMelech. It says Vayikach Shmuel es pach hashemen vayitzok al rosho. So it's like fascinating. In two cases, when the Tanakh describes the shemen, it's in a keren, and in two cases, it's described as being in a pach. And all this was hinted at in the nevuah of Chana. That in the two cases where the Shemen was in a Keren, it means it's Nimshecha, it's going to continue. And in the case of the other two kings that were anointed with Shemen and a Pach, that means it's not going to continue. Lo Nimshecha Malchusa. Now the end of Tfilas Chana, the next part of Tfilas Chana is Ein Kadosh Kashem Ki Ein Biltecha. So what is the point here? Ein Kadosh, there's a double language here, and what is she adding here that we wouldn't have known before? That there's no one like God. He represents holiness. Om Rabbi Yehuda Bar Menashe Al Tikre Biltecha. Meaning that there's none other than God, Elo Livalo Secha. And what does that mean, Livalo Secha, which only means to consume? He says, Shalok Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midas Basav Adam, Midas Basav Adam Maisa Yodov Mivalin Oso. In other words, whatever he creates would live beyond his death. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mivalo Maisa Yodov. That God is eternal. He's Chai V'Kayim L'Olam, and even that which he creates will be Kayam. But Ein Voltecha means Ein Od Mashemavales Masi Yodav Chutz Me'Hakadosh Baruch, that anything God creates will not automatically disintegrate unless the divine being decides to do so. So in the case of man, Masi Yodav Nisharim B'Olam, he can create something, and ostensibly it'll exist even beyond his death. In other words, he will disintegrate. Man will disintegrate. This is the sad, despairing part of man's ultimate destiny. But his creations can continue to exist and beyond him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he creates something, he can decide how long it's going to exist, how long it won't exist. But it certainly is not going to exist beyond the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Chai V'Kayim L'Olam.
This Al Tikri we were talking about, Al Tikri, is it's almost like this one's needed to understand the pasuk as opposed to reinterpreting the pasuk as a pasuk, because this one it's saying that none beside you means nothing you create is survives as long as you, so you always stand alone. So it's
right.
It's kind of understanding the original interpretation as opposed to being a new interpretation.
Very good, excellent. Then she says, "V'ein tzur kelokeinu," and once again the Gemara is going to darshan the word, in this case tzur, "ein sayar kelokeinu." God is the ultimate artist. Adam tzar tzur al gavya kosel, man creates a piece of art on a wall or a canvas. "V'einu yochel lahatil baruach u'neshama kirbayim u'bnei me'ayim." He cannot breathe life into that which he creates. As much as it might seem lifeless, alive, but it's lifeless. Amal Kadosh Baruch Hu tzar tzura betof tzura. And this is all a description of the fact that she gave, that she became pregnant. Right? This was the great miracle of Chana. So tzar tzura betof tzura. You know, God creates life within life. And he fashions and designs the baby in its mother's womb. Matal baruch u'neshama. And he places into man all the necessary life-giving forces, the spirit, and the ability to intake food, and so forth. Next on the list, Avigail. Now, Avigail is an interesting one because she ultimately marries David Amel, but initially she was married to a fellow by the name of Novel. Now exactly why she married Novel is unclear to me. Maybe you have something in your commentaries here, because Novel was not, shall I say, a paradigm of good ethical Jewish behavior.
We make mistakes.
Yeah, maybe he made a mistake. Maybe he was a good guy. I don't know. She tried to defend him, as we'll soon see. David initially wanted to put him to death as a Moriv Malchus, as a rebellious person. It says with regard to Avigail, "V'haya hi rocheves al hachamor v'yoredes b'sei sarhor." You know, David is now on the way to kill her husband Novel because of his morid b'malchus. Because David came with his legions, and initially they needed food and other provisions, and Novel was very chutzpahdik. And he said words against the king, like, "Who is Ben Yishai? Who is he? He's nobody. I don't have to pay attention to him." And he absolutely refuses to give up his provisions. So David is now on the warpath. And she comes out to greet him and try to stare him, you know, try to dissuade him from killing her husband, Novel. So I'll read to you here. He says that in Shmuel Aleph, it says that Novel Baila Shal Avigail, David Shalch Levakish Mere Bakosh Tnei No Eis Hashem Timtza V'yadcha V'yonah Novel B'chutzpah V'yomer Mi David U'mi Ben Yishai V'lakachti Es Lachmi V'es Meimai V'nasati La'nosh V'shalo Yadati. Am I going to give it to you? Who are you? I don't know who you are. I don't recognize you. And he's talking about the king of Israel. Kisheshamazos David, Rotzal Hargo, Vayomid David Lanoshim, Chigu Ish Escharba, is Avigail Shoma Mizer, the Holchel of Fayez as David, she tries to placate him and calm him down. Vahoyahi Rocheves Alachamor, Vyoredis Besesahor. So, in other words, she's at a distance now, because she's coming down with on the Chamor, down the mountain. Vahine David Vanoshev Yordim Lacrosse. So they're on the way and they're going to sort of meet at some point. But again, what's important for us is they're still at a distance as she's coming down the Seis Rahar. So the Gemara says that the Pasuk says Biseiser Hahar. That's a strange language. It should have said Vihio Redes Minahar Mi Boil. That's what it should have said. So what's this whole Seser business? So the word Seser here is used as a symbolic allusion to the fact that there's something going on here B'Seser. And usually things B'Seser have something to do with sexuality. Omar Rabba Bar Shmuel al Iske Dam Habamin Astarin. She was coming ostensibly to ask him a question about Dam Nidus, which is coming from what's called the Beis Hastara, they're the privates, right? Nitola Dam Verosa Lo. So David was the posek. That's what elsewhere, David says that my hands got filthy with dam. He meant to dam nida, that he would have to paskin on a dam nida. So again, if this story was to be read just on this level, then, you know, okay, so we don't know exactly what's going on here. She's coming to ask a question about dam nidus. But it's much more than that. Omer Allah, David says to Avigail. Now, the strange thing about this Gemara is that the facts and this of the story are not presented in chronological order. So what we're learning now, Omer Allah, that David's response to her, that actually comes a little bit later on in the story. It gets a little confusing because, you know, if you don't follow the chronology here, it gets really confusing. He says, so at the end of this whole story, that's what we're reading now. We're going to go through the story in a minute. But at the end of the story, David says to her, "V'chimar in tam b'layla." In other words, you want to get a psak on a maris tam, whether it's tame, whether it's tar, then we don't paskin this at night. And that's why the pasuk says, "Im ashir mikol asher lo ad haboker," meaning we should wait till the morning. And this is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, which Chazal apparently learned from that we don't paskin on a dam nida at night. It could be that some poskim will paskin at night if need be, but only if you have a very intense volume of clear light at night, if you can create that light. Okay, so now we get to the real part of the story. Amr lo, Avigail turns to David and she says, "V'idanin dini nefashis balayla." You'll notice here that in both cases of the dam nida, where David says, I can't paskin at night, so she turns around and says to him, "Wait a minute, you're paskining at night for dini nefashis, and we have a principle of ain donin dini nefashis balayla." Now the truth is that although ain donin dini nefashis balayla, if you started the judgment by day, you could issue a verdict at night. But the only thing is that there's a din with regard to din nefashos that you have to wait till the next day.
But isn't that for a beis din? Whereas he's using a din
nefashos. So that's what this whole discussion is about, back and forth. In other words, she's applying the normal din of beis din of ein donin din nefashos balayla to this case of nasa. Omar Allah, so here we turn to Daf Yudalim and Beis. Mori v'malchus who below tzarch l'medayne. In this case of a rebellious person, we're not confined by the laws of judgment. Now again, if you take this Gemara literally, and Rashi's not going to take it literally, it sounds like you don't need any judgment, right? Lo tzarch l'medayne. We don't have to judge him. No, it's he's a chutzpinyak, he rebelled against the king, he said, "Mi David, mi ben Yishai," and Amori b'machus, we can kill him without a din. And Tosus is actually of the opinion, not here but elsewhere, that ein tzarich ladin klal, as the melech has his prerogative to put a person to death as Amori b'machus, without a due process of law. However, Tosus here, Dibur Maskil Mori, holds that no, the Gemara doesn't mean that we can completely circumvent the process of law, but rather it's not bound, the judgment of a Mori B'Malach is not restricted to the same regulations, the same conditions, which means you're allowed to start the judgment by day, you're allowed to hand out a verdict at night, and that's it. Efshal aduna bo bayom lechova, and we can come to that conclusion and issue a final verdict on that very day, meaning in the night after the day. In normal dini nefashos, you can't issue the verdict until you wait overnight. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, if I'm not mistaken, the reason for that is they want the dayanim to rethink that decision. I mean, there's a human life at stake over here. But here in the case of Mori B'Malchus, we don't have to do that.
This cites Rambam holding that for a traitor, he's the judge. The king judges him informally, and it doesn't go to a beis din.
So he's holding like Tosfos in Sanhedrin, Daflu Lamed Vav, that ein tzarich laduno klal. But as I said before, our Tosfos in Dibur Maskil Morim And Rashi seems to agree with Tosfos. They're of the opinion that no, you can't just circumvent the whole legal system. But the law that you have to wait overnight in order to put someone to death and issue the final verdict, that doesn't apply to Morid B'Malchus. Aralos, Abigail says to David, okay, fine. You want to judge him as a Morid B'Malchus, and therefore you want to put him to death either without any judgment at all or on the same, you know, issue a verdict on the same day as the judgment. He says, but wait a minute. Is he really a Morid B'Malchus? Adayin Shol Kayam. It's very difficult to assume, that's what she argues to Dov, that you are the king, that you have the same halach as a melech, when Shol is still alive and well. You know, if, after Shol's death, you can assume the mantle of kingship, but not yet. V'lo yotza tivacha ba'olam. You know, nobody has heard about you, nobody has accepted you as a king, or if there are any... anyone who does, and he's in the minorities, individuals, but Novel has no reason to assume that you're the king. You know, your name as the king has not been widespread. Allah, so David is very impressed by Abigail. Baruch ta'ameich ubrucha at asher kalisini hayom azemi bo b'damim. Notice he blesses her and praises her because she saved him from spilling innocent blood. Because since the name of David as king was not misparsev, it wasn't well known, therefore the status of Nabal is not that of a Morid B'Malchus. So the Gemara now asks the following. It says in the Pasuk Damim, let's go back to the Pasuk here. Oh, where is the pasuk here? Just one second. Mavo b'damim. Where is? Oh, here it is. Right here. I'm sorry. The last word that we just read. So it says mibo b'damim. Now damim is in the plural. It could have said dam. Tarte mashma. There are two damim over here. The Gemara wants to know who. What are these two damim? Elamalamed. Shegilsa es shoka. Now here, the Mepharshim say that gilsa es shoka is not to be taken as a deliberate act on her part to provoke. I'm looking for a different word. Okay, it'll come to me. Hopefully, to arouse David HaMelech. But rather, she exposed her shok from a distance. Again, David HaMelech was at a distance. For whatever reason, she did so, and it was probably, you know, she was getting dressed, or so she didn't even see David. She didn't even guess that David was there. And he says here the name of the Marsha, and Rav Yaakov Emden said before the Marsha, he says that Kisasa Atzma, as soon as she saw that David was coming and would see her show, is Miyad. David bought Pison. Now the distance between David and Abigail at this point is Gimel Parsos. Now it's going to take David a while till he traverses a distance of Gimel Parsos. Belisha Raso Oz. And during this period of time which David HaMelech he's seen Hashok, again, this is something mysterious going on here, and he's on his way. She doesn't even see him yet. And it says, Tekev Biaso Chamimus. Holach bi'or asher zeh gimel parsos ashegia eleha. He's motivated by his desire, and there's some sort of a chamimus, a burning passion within him. And David HaMelech is on a way for three parsos in order to encounter her. Now, what happens when he meets up with her? So it says, Holach li ora sholosh parsos. So again, it says li ora, which means har or. which is a little strange because until now we've been talking about his passion. Now all of a sudden she has an R. So I'm not sure how to reconcile that. Maybe he has something there. You'll tell me. But he says here, La'or shuka, la'ora hakavanah li'or shallah, v'nis'ava elel li'ora gimel parsos bali choso. Love our law, and he says to her, Hishami li. And again, the first we have a problem here because it sounds like David HaMelech wants to have a relationship with a woman who's married. So, how is that possible? So, it means this is what the Ben Ish Chai says that he meant after Nabal will die and then I can marry you, then we should have that marriage relationship. Omer lo, so Abigail says, Lo tia zos lecha lefuka. Let this not be a michshol, because if this will be a michshol, that is, if you approach the married woman and you're already setting up some sort of relationship with her for after the time her husband dies, then that's not going to hold up for your reputation in the future. And you need desperately to maintain a reputation. And why is that? Zos. Because the word zos means that not only is this going to be a michshol, but also there'll be another michshol, michal te'ikachriti, that there's going to be another michshol with David is going to have a forbidden relationship. So it means that she already predicted down the line the Maisa Batsheva. Again, this touches on the whole issue of Yudiyah Bechira. I mean, how could David be responsible for words? She already had a prophecy. But again, we have to assume the prophecy would foretell what's going to happen later on.
She's foretelling his personality, too.
Yeah. And at the end, actually, David HaMelech had this michshol. And the Gemara here proves that Abigail was an avia. She knew that David HaMelech would have a michshol with Batsheva. I don't know if she mentioned Batsheva's name here. I don't think so. She just said the word Zos. And the pasuk describes the encounter with Batsheva. V'yishlach David v'yidrosh l'isha v'yomar lo Zos Batsheva eishes uriach hiti v'yishlach David malach v'yikachel v'atomo. A love. So basically Abigail is saying, you know, hold on, because you're going to get into deep trouble. And if you get into deep trouble now, then you won't be able to be saved in the future. Okay, we didn't get to finish the sugya, but I see it's really late. I didn't realize what time it was. So believe me, we'll try to pick this up tomorrow. Everyone should have a great day.